Welcome into Level Up Experience. This is episode number 41. This is with Bobby Baird, the Director of Strategic Partnerships at Stream Hatchet. This was a previously recorded LinkedIn live stream at the end of March. Stream Hatchet is a data analytics company for esports, gaming, and influencers. We actually show off the tool on YouTube, so make sure to go back and watch the replay. We will put the link to the show notes in the description. One interesting point is we overlaid Twitch, YouTube, and actually Mixer engagement, because this was back in March. So this is before Mixer was closed down. So it was interesting to go back and take a look at that. And this was right after COVID-19 really spiked and looking at the engagement during the month of March. So it was a really interesting conversation and appreciated Bobby coming on. A couple announcements before we get going here. Really excited to announce that GG Locators is now the sponsor partner of the Level Up Experience. GG Locators is a contract staffing and executive search firm, highly specialized in sourcing and placing top-tier talent in gaming, esports, and extended realities. Nicole Minka is the managing director, and she'll have more information about GG Locators shortly. Make sure to subscribe to the Level Up Experience Substack. We released it a couple weeks ago. The link will be in the show notes. It's a newsletter on emerging tech, focusing mostly on gaming, esports, and crypto. But I throw in some op-eds, some post-podcast reactions, and some other interesting articles. Make sure to subscribe at levelupexp.substack.com. That's levelupexp.substack.com. And last, also really excited to make this announcement. We are now on the Community app. So here's how this works. It's a text platform. You'll text from your smartphone, text START to 502-237-7082. Again, text START to 502-237-7082. This is going to give you access to early release Level Up Experience content, exclusive virtual events, merch giveaways. Maybe you want to suggest a guest or yourself for the show. But basically, it's a one-to-one communication with myself. And this will obviously be the best way to get a hold of me. I've been really excited to get this going. Been looking at this for a few months, and we've got it rolling now. So let's get as much feedback on the text community app, as well as a Level Up Experience Substack. So feel free to send me some feedback or questions, comments. Again, you text START to 502-237-7082 for that one-to-one communication line with myself. Thank you for the five-star rating and reviews, subscribing to the podcast and YouTube channel, smashing the like button on every video. That's how we get the word out about the content, and it is greatly appreciated. Thank you all for being here, and hope you enjoy this podcast with Bobby Baird from Stream Hatchet.
Hi, my name is Nicole Minka, and I'm the Managing Director of GG Locators. GG Locators, or Good Game Recruiting, is the first staffing firm operating as a niche provider specifically for the gaming industry in the U.S. Our company launched in February 2019, and we've taken the market by storm. We are a contract to hire, and direct hire staffing solution for your entire organization. Our focus is on the highly specialized verticals of interactive gaming, corporate gamification, and esports, which makes us the unrivaled experts in gaming recruitment. Our clients range from indie studios to AAA household names to multi-billion dollar corporate powerhouses who work with us to find top talent, ranging from art and design, production, QA, programming, to corporate support and operations. While we're headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina, we work with dev studios, publishers, esports organizations, and corporate gamification teams across North America. From East Coast to West Coast, we are laser focused in providing the best talent and opportunities to our clients. We're currently spearheading over 60 searches and are in hot pursuit of qualified and passionate candidates to match with the perfect career opportunity. So if you or a colleague are looking for the next step in gaming or to grow your team out, reach out to us at gglocators.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Bobby, I'm going to give you the floor, catch up to speed about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my name is Bobby. I work at a data company called Stream Hatchet. And essentially what we have is a data research platform to help businesses in gaming and esports kind of make decisions around how do you go to market in live streaming. So we collect data from about 20 different platforms around the world. So it's really a global product. And we look at influencers, esports events, video games, platforms themselves. And work pretty closely with video game publishers like Riot, Blizzard. We work with Twitch. So a lot of the kind of stakeholders in gaming. And then kind of what I do in that, which is fun, is it's kind of a hybrid role between kind of biz dev and customer experience. Been here about 2 years now, and really took the product from what it was originally, which was a streamer tool, which perhaps actually Chris and I were kind of chatting about that earlier back in Chris's streaming days, was that it originally was a tool for streamers that, you know, anyone could log into, kind of monitor their channel for $10 a month, kind of Netflix style. And I was joined, my colleague and I, Jake, kind of took the product from that and scaled it into this nice looking B2B product, which we kind of call like the Bloomberg terminal of esports.
Yeah. So just real quick, why is it important to have this type of data? Like what's the value add?
Yeah, no, I think right now, you know, with that, like everyone's looking for data. Because something we were chatting about earlier is, you know, everyone needs data to reinforce their pitch and kind of tell the story, add context, and reinforce the narrative that they're trying to tell, whether it's raise money for a startup, provide a brand with post-campaign reporting, or kind of make like a business decision. I think one of the things we were talking about that's fun is like every deck has, you know, that green, awesome green Newzoo graphic. Yeah. That shows like the global size of the market, and that's useful. I think you know, we even use that deck, that piece in our decks, but it doesn't really show at the granular level. Like, you know, it shows, hey, here's the big picture of what I'm trying to do, but you know, what am I trying to do specifically within that? And that's really what we try to do at Stream Hatchet, is reinforce those narratives so that you can kind of get out there and kind of accomplish your business objectives.
Exactly. You got the big picture, but then your picture, you know, for your project. We talked about that where, you know, look, there's a lot of conversation around esports numbers and things like that. Well, how does that apply to your particular situation and what you're doing with your project? So making sure those align, because just taking numbers and throwing it at people when it really doesn't apply to what you're doing, right? You know, the $1 billion revenue number doesn't necessarily apply to a local space or an event venue, things like that. So like being able to narrow down on the micro and say, hey, here's data that actually more applies to what we're doing as a company, as a startup, I think has a lot of value.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I was trying to look at right now, and we'll probably cover in a couple minutes, is, you know, unfortunately, there's a global pandemic, which is keeping a lot of us at home. And one of the most exciting things for me about esports was those live events. I've been to both Overwatch League Grand Finals, which were awesome, and I've been to the Rainbow Six Major as well. That being said, you know, we can't do that right now, so everyone's looking for, you know, opportunities to monetize and still reach those audiences and bring out, create compelling content. So another reason to have data right now is to show that, hey, you know, there's still an opportunity in esports. You know, look at the audiences that are already on these platforms. You know, there's opportunity for sports to kind of come over here as well. You know, you have like the NWSL or Premier League or even the NFL that are activating on a lot of these platforms already. So, you know, what audiences exist here? What content's popular? We got to fill that void that, you know, all the traditional sports leagues are that have left, I guess. Yeah.
Right. So real quick, a couple shout outs. Cash Cows, what's up on LinkedIn? VJ, how you doing? Carrie, thanks for being here. Carrie's from Vegas. What's going on? How are you? Thanks for jumping in. Organized Gaming on YouTube, thanks for hanging out as well. Ken out of Toronto. So we have a very wide range of representation from a lot of different places. So appreciate you guys jumping in. All right. Well, is it okay? Can we go ahead? And what we wanted to do is have a conversation around data, a little fun around data. So we're going to share Bobby's screen and go through some interesting numbers to look at. And I love the visuals of the platform. And we talked about it before we jumped on, is that you're able to look at a number of different charts pretty quickly. And it's, for me, a lot of this is easy on the eyes. I think the visual side of things is really important. So I'm going to go ahead and share our screen. So everybody should be able to see this. And then can you walk us through and tell us a little bit what we're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is our business intelligence platform. We track, as I said, we track about 20 platforms around the world. And really what this tool enables you to do is either look for source different esports organizers, influencers, or streamers to kind of activate with, measure their audiences effectively. So for example, you know, this first tool here is like a channels discovery. If I wanted to see, you know, the top streamers or events who played Valorant, which is a game that's definitely very, very popular right now, you know, I could look over the last month, look at all those channels, and you'll kind of see ranked by hours watched, which is kind of like our gold standard when it comes to streaming metrics, who the top streamer was. And looks like this guy here was actually number one, Czech streamer. So this is our channel's discovery here, channel searcher. If I wanted to like go into more detail, maybe just take a look at his channel over like the last couple days, I could do so. I could load that data and just get some more context, kind of see what he's streaming. That's quite impressive. Over 1 million hours of content watched by this streamer. And he seems to be streaming it all the time. And
it's over the past week, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just over the last couple days here. So kind of going back up here just to kind of pause. I think one of the big challenges right now with the, I guess like industry is that there are a lot of metrics that people are looking for, whether they're coming from, cause I guess like with, you know, with streaming platforms, like this is a complete new beast. Like people haven't seen this before. They don't really know how to activate. They don't know how to measure it. Right. So you have kind of two brains, I think, that are trying to adapt to that. So you have the TV brains, you know, big brands there are used to seeing the Nielsen reports. They kind of get those, that measurement. They understand how that works. And then you have the digital brains who get Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and they get those metrics and how to activate there. So kind of where streaming is it's a digital platform. So you definitely have the kind of digital side of things there. People understand like impressions or views a little bit. And then you have the linear world where people understand like average audience or reach. And so what we're kind of struggling with right now is, you know, there are ways to kind of satisfy that like media buyer spreadsheet that you have, and you could pull out all this information. That being said, it might not always be the best. So like views is a classic one to talk about. So views from the digital world, we understand views as like, okay, someone like clicked on something, they watched it for a certain amount of time, and then they went and watched some other VOD content. With streaming, it actually doesn't really work because Twitch defines a view drastically differently than YouTube designs a view. And it really has to do with the watch time of content. So for Twitch, for someone to count as a view, a new view, they only have to watch 10 seconds of content. And then this will go up, you know, it'll go up from 2 million, 100,078, you know, up by one, right? And that's just 10 seconds of content. With YouTube, they have to watch 6 minutes of that live stream for them to be counted as a view. So where we're trying to help brands is to really understand that from a cross-platform perspective, like, hey, you need to think about these metrics differently. You need to think about them on the platform level. You know, you can't compare like Ninja's views on Mixer to Ninja's views on Twitch. Like you're talking about totally different metrics with definitions. So what we've been trying to work to do with Nielsen and some of the other key parties in the space is, you know, look at all these KPIs that all these platforms provide. They're not going to want to change them because you got to remember, YouTube is a $22 billion company in revenue, and esports is just a little tiny speck within that. They're not going to reinvent their whole API system to accommodate Twitch, which is, by the way, owned by Amazon, a key competitor to Google. So what we're trying to do with, you know, a lot of the leaders in the space is like, look at all these KPIs and go, okay, what's the same over here? What's the same over here? And what we found is that watch time, a minute watched on any platform is still going to be a minute watched everywhere. So we're trying to kind of standardize that around a metric called average minute audience or AMA, as I think some of you have seen in like the Wall Street Journal Overwatch League announced some statistics there.
Yeah, thanks for going through that. Can you just talk about engagement? Because I think there's such a wide range of a definition of what engagement actually is. And you kind of touched on it a little bit. But there's so many different types of metrics out there that, like you said, it is kind of overwhelming. Then how do you activate against those? So talk about engagement, because is engagement me having 8 windows open? And, you know, I'm on Windows 7, but window 2, like the second window is open, but I'm not actually engaging in it. But it's counted as a view because it's the second window open on my screen that I'm not even paying attention to.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's a great question. I know TV is thinking about that as well. So I was listening to someone at ComScore say this, but they said they don't even consider a lot of television viewers. They don't consider a lot of television viewers even active viewers anymore, because if I'm on the couch watching TV, chances are, you know, I got my phone up, you know, I'm texting, I'm on TikTok, I'm on whatever, I'm not really paying attention. So I think, that's a great point, because that's on live stream. Like, I have 2 monitors here. Typically what I'll do is, you know, I'm working here, or maybe I'm gaming here, and then I have my streams over on the other monitor. The great thing about what we do is we're able to pull in all that data and kind of quantify, like, what does engagement mean? So obviously one definition of engagement could be, you know, minutes watched, like how much content is being consumed actively by the audience. I heard a nice stat that Netflix is only ahead of Twitch in terms of daily minutes watched by, I think, 15 minutes. Like, the average viewer of Twitch watches about 108 minutes of content a day. So that's one definition. But I think what we like to look at too is, you know, we look at all of the chat messages being sent. We look at all the bits and all the subscriptions to really show, like, what's the quality of that audience. So how many chat messages are being sent by how many chatters gets us closer to, a kind of engagement ratio on that side. And I know that's an important KPI for a lot of our agency clients who work with those brands to kind of tell that full story. Because I think what they run into a lot of is, you know, yes, there are a lot of eyeballs on the Tim the Tapmans or the Dr. Lupos or the Shrouds. You know, there are a lot of eyeballs there, but what does that mean for my brand? And I remember one report we did a couple months back for Dr. Lupo and Ninja. And what we found in that report was that even though Ninja's audience was about like 4 or 5 times the size of Dr. Lupo at the time, I think actually this was last year, we actually saw more meaningful engagement from a chat message perspective on Dr. Lupo's channel. He had all these branded emotes for Hershey's. And so what we were able to help the agency do is kind of show that story, tell that story of the brand is, like, you know, yes, streamer number 2 did not perform as successfully from an audience perspective, but look what he did in that engagement, you know.
So that was called engagement ratio?
So we would define that as the engagement ratio, which would be the total chat messages sent divided by the total number of chatters.
Okay. Yeah. Just in my mind, over time, obviously, these metrics are going to get better, right? To be able to define what engagement actually is. And I think engagement was defined differently just even a couple of years ago. Maybe I'm wrong about that. So I think that's something that's, you know, being able to build those out and the KPIs associated with it is important to tell that story, because then that's going to bring in more global brands, because they have the data that actually tells the right story as to what's actually happening versus just random data getting thrown at someone.
Mm-hmm. So. No, absolutely. I think that's a great point, is, you know, finding those KPIs. And I think something even we're struggling with a little bit is, there are a lot of companies like us that are pulling the same data, but we're kind of telling different, we value things differently in terms of, you know, what we value for our data. We value things differently in terms of which metrics are most important, or like how frequently we're pulling data. So it's a learning process. I think we're all moving towards that, because the goal is to make the brands happy and kind of tell that story for them in the right way that fits what they need with kind of the raw facts or the raw data. So I'm seeing a couple cool messages here in chat, or interesting questions. So one of them from Average Husband. That's a great question. You know, will non-gaming related streams find success on Twitch? I think the answer is absolutely yes. And I'll actually show you versus kind of tell you.
For those that don't know, like, you know, IRL started what, like 2017. So in real life, and then Just Chatting recently started last couple of years. So, maybe you can answer this yourself too, but like 2015, 2016 kind of felt like when the IRLs really started to shift and started to take off outside of just gaming content. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I was going to show something completely different, but I think IRL and just chatting is something fascinating to talk about. So I'll show versus tell. I think, you know, number here, I just looked over the last year period, and you can actually see like that just chatting category is number 4 across all platforms. And that's just on Twitch compared to like GTA or League of Legends. You know, obviously Fortnite is going to be number 1. That game really had a breakthrough and success over the last 2 years. We'll see how it does. But just chatting and kind of the ability to just engage with an influencer or someone where you almost feel like you're having a conversation with them in real time is something that's so unique to these platforms like Twitch.
Right. And like, I think you mentioned it, just the relationship side of it, because it feels like with just chatting or even IRL, but there's less of a barrier. You mentioned, I don't know how to put this into words, but I think that, and do we know when just chatting became a genre?
I believe it was sometime last year.
Okay.
I actually think you described it really well, is it like the barrier to entry is so minimal. Cause like League of Legends, I think I enjoy that game. I play it almost every day, but if I were to show it to like my parents or something like this, and I was like, oh, watch this stream, like this guy's hilarious, they would not appreciate the humor I see out of that stream. Mm-hmm. It is a very complex game. There are all these rules, all these mechanics. I think Dota, from a marketing perspective, something interesting that they do on the brand side is they really lean into that. They lean into like how difficult it is to understand. And even if their fan base isn't as big or as broad reaching as say like Overwatch or Rocket League can be, they can create really unique activations for those brands because they're so nuanced and so niche. And so it's like, oh, you really have to love the game of Dota. You really have to appreciate the game of Dota to understand this activation. On the other side of that, I think just chatting is the ultimate kind of opener. It's so broad reaching because it's like what we're doing right now, right? We're just having a conversation, you know, two microphones, two webcams, just talking about whatever. Something that I've seen in just chatting that I find incredibly fascinating, it's this weird paradox, is I think most of the just chatting content right now that we see is streamers watching and reacting to YouTube videos, which is just so odd that someone on Twitch, an audience on Twitch, is technically watching YouTube, but they're watching the content creator on Twitch. You know, it's so odd.
Yeah, and that's the whole Netflix party, this next level of getting together and watching content together versus you by yourself watching it. And obviously this has been happening, but I think that's really, you're going to see a lot more of that the next year plus of a group watching a video or watching a stream together and being able to interact with each other. That's exactly what this is. Because it's funny how it's two platforms kind of layered on each other, right? Because it's the just chatting on Twitch, watching a YouTube video, but the integrations, they're coming. All I can say, because I'm part of a project with this, all I can say, it's coming. Okay. And being able to have a party on and layering all this where you can watch and listen to each other and interact with each other while watching a stream. Because that's not going away. And you've seen a lot of, obviously if you knew what happened kind of with Netflix party on the Netflix side of things, some people like there's enjoyment of watching, you know, having 5 or 6 of your friends watching something together versus yourself. So that's kind of, I do think that the new layer that a lot of people are going to adopt over the next year.
Yeah. I think the Netflix party is a great analogy. I actually have the extension right here. So I'm a user. I'm a user of that.
Exactly. So I find that I obviously find that really interesting. All right. So Ken's got a question. Thank you all very much for jumping in with questions. So we'd love to field as much of these as possible. Ken says, are you able to track the demographics of who's engaging in the chat messages?
That is a really fun question that we get all the time. The quick answer is no, but I'll kind of tell you why for a second. So right now, unfortunately, Twitch and YouTube, I believe as well, lock their first-party data or that to kind of first-party data. So only the channel owners are able to kind of see that. And then additionally, from a demographics perspective, it's really limited. So unfortunately, if I'm a brand and I'm activating with the Overwatch League, I'm not able to get state-level data. I guess previously, if I had been activating with the Overwatch League when they were exclusive to Twitch, YouTube, I think, is a bit more open on this. But I'm not able to get state-level data, which is really unfortunate because you have a league that's based on franchise leagues. So there's a real lack of demographic information. And unfortunately, you know, we're a third-party company, so we only process data that we're able to get publicly through third-party APIs. There are a lot of data privacy reasons why third parties aren't enabled to process that data. Like, you don't want to have another Cambridge Analytica on your hands. So Amazon, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, they're being very careful with how much data they release. Unfortunately, that's a detriment to the brands because I have to tell smart people like you every day, like, hey, I wish I could answer that question for you, but unfortunately, I can't. Do I see that changing in the future? Yes, I think, that is crucial for brands. I think if these platforms want to continue to purchase this kind of content and distribute it on their platforms, they're going to need to be able to provide the brands that level of demographics. Where I think that the way I think that'll be displayed is it's going to be through kind of first party data relationships. So you'll have to work directly with the publisher or stakeholder to kind of agree to let you process that information. Where I think we are with that in terms of a timeline, I think it's going to take a bit of time. There's a lot of turnover right now at some of the among key decision makers. So it'll be some time, but hopefully not too long from now.
No, I'm glad you went through that. Data that's rich. We talked about this before we jumped back, but rich data that has the ability to make decisions off of, right? That's just going to get better over time. So Ken, that's a good question.
You got to make 1 + 1 = 3. I think that's one of the, and I can't take credit for this. This really goes to the Stream Hatchet engineers. But I think what we do really well is, we pull all this data, especially like cross-platform is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. I think the demographic side is, kind of a side to this, but still related, is the value of data is how much you can take and then put it together to tell that compelling story. So what we do really well right now is, we look at these games and we can really tell you where the audience is and like who the top streamers are. Like, for example, over the last year, this is Ninja on Twitch at the time, but you can really see the difference in dedication from these top streamers and kind of what platforms they're on.
Quick question from David. Does the metrics allow you to measure at what time of day you get the most and least amount of traffic?
Yeah, that is something we've been exploring a lot of recently. We definitely do that at the channel level right now. I'll show you some of the esports teams we have a partnership with TSM and they use that. They use this functionality to do exactly that. So let's go here really quickly. There we go. So essentially what they're able to do from an influencer perspective is, they have like 15 or 20 or probably even more than that. I think they have like 60 influencers that they represent between content creators or esports pros. And really what they use our tool to do is, you know, aggregate that group together so they can understand the impact on of audience on those specific times. So we can look very granularly and kind of see when those spikes are based on the influencers. So I'll just zoom into this particular moment here, but you can actually see, you know, they reached, you know, that's surprising for me, 10:12 a.m. I think generally the peak that I see on Twitch as a platform, and I'll pop over here too to kind of show you that.
I would assume late evening, if you're talking about time of day, maybe late evening Eastern. I don't know if that's.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's around like, I think 3:44 p.m. is like peak peak audience time for Twitch. That's adjusted a little bit since COVID. I think if we zoom back out here.
That's interesting. I thought it might have been later actually, but yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's earlier than people think. I think the reason that is like Twitch is also a popular platform in Western Europe. So you kind of have that audience too to consider.
Sure.
Then you have, you know, LA area kind of like waking up. They're probably at work. They probably have their stream on their second monitor like us. And then, you know, you have Europe ending your day, and then Eastern time, you have a lot of kids getting out of school. So that those are probably some of the factors that move towards that. In terms of COVID, let's just see if there's an impact on that time. So it looks like it's moved. That was like what? 2:44. Looks like it hasn't adjusted too much from a time perspective. Let's see, 1 o'clock. Which one's this? A little bit earlier. But yeah, I think we ran an analysis over the last couple weeks, and we've definitely seen that time actually move a bit earlier. I was mistaken because people are at home, you know, what else is there to do, right? Play video games, watch Twitch.
Right. The other thing on the team thing, or on like a TO that has has an account, it's just obviously you're able to measure that particular event. So if, you know, if I'm running a Smash Melee event, I get to see when the peaks were and things like that, you know, comparing the grand finals versus, you know, the third round or whatever. So I think that's really cool because you're able to actually have data and analytics on the entirety of the tournament. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I'll take a look at that, but it, one of the things we're able to do on that side is, yeah, like not all Twitch viewers are the same, or not all esports fans are the same. You know, every fan's a little different. You know, I'll use the analogy of kind of my team to kind of describe that. And I actually think Nuzu, I got to give them a little credit here. They've looked at this a little bit. They have their kind of like gamer segmentation. But like, you know, the Call of Duty fan is going to be dramatically different than the League of Legends fan, who's going to be different than the CSGO fan, or is going to be different than the Overwatch fan. And with that, you know, there's probably different behaviors around what time of day they're consuming content. Like the Call of Duty fan, let's take a look there and kind of see what that looks like from a time perspective. And this is all Eastern time, by the way. But you can see Call of Duty tends to spike around, like, let's see, 4:30. Whereas I bet if we look at something like Rainbow Six, Siege, Tom Clancy, we're probably going to see like an earlier time zone. Yeah, slightly earlier, 2 o'clock. And perhaps what that is like, this is a game that might be more appealing to like a European audience, whereas COD is very popular in America. And I think you see that from the franchise structure, the league structure, where the Call of Duty League, like I think there's only one team, one or two teams in Europe, whereas Siege and the ESL has a whole league dedicated to just the EU.
Gotcha. So you can actually, the data shows the saturation then at certain,
exactly,
certain times, how they behave differently.
Awesome.
There was another overlay chart of, because obviously the streaming wars in Q3, Q4 last year, that was obviously a huge topic, and it's obviously still ongoing, but it was really kind of like the topic in the space. Like I would say Q4 roughly. There's an interesting chart you guys have, how it overlays Shroud and Ninja, and then when they transition from Twitch to Mixer, I think a lot of people, it's also aesthetically, you know, easy on the eyes, but it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull this up right now. I will apologize. I was informed earlier today that we're running some maintenance on the studio. Oh, look at that.
There we go.
It's actually working quite nicely. Let's see if I can't do a little bit of an earlier time frame. go October. See if that's too much to parse. I did download the report, so I can show that, but sure enough. So yeah, exactly that. I think one of the questions that a lot of talent agencies were asking previously and might still be asking is, you know, right now you have these big tech companies that have huge budgets to invest in taking on game streaming. And so the question they're grappling with is, you know, do I paycheck, get a lot of PR, move my talent to another platform and kind of take the risk? Or is it better to continue on my platform? Do I go to my current platform and try to get an exclusive deal like I think Courage and Dr. Lupo have now? And really what we want to help those talent agencies or brands or platforms understand is, you know, what is the impact of that? So this analysis here looks at total minutes watched since October 2018. You can see by each streamer and kind of where they are now. So with Ninja and Shroud, you know, their audiences have definitely significantly decreased since that move. I will say what's good for Ninja and what Ninja kind of got out of that and what the brand Microsoft got out of that is, you know, Mixer as a product has generated a lot more product public awareness since that move. You know, I think before then, you know, if you knew what Mixer was, you either worked at Hi-Rez and you were kind of running your esports through their platform, or you were like very invested in the gaming ecosystem. So by making that switch, you know, you took really the first celebrity gamer who's even more of a celebrity than Faker or, you know, Skump or any of these other kind of like esports stars that we think of. It was the first time that a creator really made a big move like that. And perhaps you had people who hadn't even heard of Twitch before, now hearing about Twitch and Mixer at the same time. With Shroud, you know, I think his audience has definitely decreased as well. I will say what I've seen at like a high level from a creator perspective is that the market has become a lot more saturated. You know, I think before we would have seen the top creators on Twitch doing around like, I'll pop back here just to double check myself. But before we would have seen a lot of the top creators like Tfue or whoever getting around like 40,000 concurrents. We're not really seeing that anymore with North American creators. You can see Tfue's here is around like 25,000. You know, we got some anomalies here with some of the more international creators or some of the esports leagues, but even Tim the Tatman as well. So I think we've seen a decrease across the board. Does that mean that there's less of an audience? Absolutely not. It's just, as I said earlier, you know, a Rocket League fan is not going to be the same as a Call of Duty fan, just like a Tim the Tatman fan is not going to be the same as a Dr. Lupo fan. Actually, they are the same. I can show you that in a second, too.
Yeah, sure. If you want to pull it up. No, I like that. I like that comparison and having that overlaid because that was obviously something they already talked about in the transition. You know, some people say, you know, with the Mixer move with Ninja, that's a longer term branding kind of thing. I think that was kind of the what you kind of mentioned looking at that. So and that's all still ongoing as well. Like, I don't think somebody has all the answers as to what should have been done or could have been done or. I think a lot of people are figuring out, obviously Twitch coming out and kind of locking in after the fact, you know, locking in some other streamers to their platforms. And, you know, I think it's just still ongoing.
Yeah. And we'll see. I think, it'll be interesting to see, like, especially, I did a little post on Facebook Gaming this week that I'll actually show you now. You know, Facebook Gaming this week launched, a mobile gaming app dedicated, for watching games, organizing tournaments. I think there's some gameplay on there as well. And what we had seen historically from them, and you can even see this here, is like they're not very high in the category. They're only about like 10 or 11% of the market. That being said, what I've seen that's pretty surprising to me, just looking at them from a growth trajectory perspective, is like they have really grown quickly year over year. I just unclick some of these guys. Like, that's pretty significant growth. If I look at like the monthly level, let's see here again, you can really see like their audience has dramatically increased. Why and kind of where is that audience, or what does that mean? As you might know, that gaming app actually started its release in Southeast Asia. And when we kind of look at the top influencers on that platform, you will notice, you know, they are a lot of APAC, LATAM. And so I think they've actually been very successful at converting that audience. That might be because Facebook is actually getting a lot of adoption internationally versus domestically in the United States, which kind of goes with that. But given that was a successful push, you know, I am interested to see if that will convert more US-based consumers of gaming content to kind of adopt that as their platform of choice. You know, it's to be determined. I think one of the arguments I see against that is that, or there are two really main ones. So the first one will be a tech side, is that their actual platform, the live capabilities were originally built off of the mobile, which has had a lot of disadvantages. I've heard about a lot of crash streams or kind of ineffective stuff. But on the other side of that coin, maybe that's not necessary. You know, Twitch is a very old product from a platform perspective versus Mixer, which is a really great product. But if we go back to the numbers there and kind of see how they're doing, like they actually haven't been growing.
I saw month over month from I guess Q3 till now, or like Q4 or Q3 last year till now, like they've had they peaked and then they've had slower growth over the last month over month every month. Maybe I was looking at the wrong thing, but
no, it's that you're hitting the nail on the head. Like I think looks like they peaked around May, 40 million hours watched, and then they had a better month last month in March, but it's still decreasing. Like I'm sure if we ran the equation to see percentage uptick, like your percentage uptick, and if I pop back here to kind of cross platform, you know, you do see a significant uptick platform to platform, but was theirs the same as Twitch, which I think had a 20% or a 25% uptick since COVID, whereas Mixer might only be seeing like a 5% uptick. So is that really fairly significant for them, or not really? You know, I think that product, the thing I like about Mixer and I like about Microsoft is there are so many cool pieces to put together there. Like you have xCloud releasing, you have a great collection and portfolio of IP. I think their Games Pass Ultimate, which I'm a subscriber of as well, is a really interesting product, but they're just not putting the pieces together like they should be. The most natural fit for me seems like, okay, creators need a way to monetize on your platform and feel successful by growing an audience. Otherwise, they're not going to be as motivated to do so. What's the easiest way to do that is to copy Amazon and Twitch. Anyone that subscribes to Game Pass Ultimate should be given a free Mixer sub. You know, why aren't they doing that yet? I think Microsoft's a big company. There's a lot of different silos to kind of put together, and I hope they're working towards that. It's just unfortunate that they haven't been able to solve that problem yet.
All right, so we've got about 15, 20 minutes. If you have a question, go ahead and jump in. We're going to try to answer all those within the next 20 minutes. Feel free to do that on all platforms because we'll be able to see on all of them, because we'd love to answer some questions. I'd love to talk about this real quick. There was a chart on here I saw with OTT, mm-hmm. and comparing Twitch to other subscription services such as Hulu, mm-hmm. HBO, Netflix. Can you talk about that a little bit and what you've seen on some of the numbers?
Sure.
When you look at the different subscription services.
So I will say, that is not our area of expertise.
Gotcha.
I'm guilty of making that chart. What I like to do a lot of is like look at different data sets, and combine them. So that was a data set that I sourced, I think, from CNBC, mm-hmm. right around the time that Disney Plus came out. Mm-hmm. And really what I was thinking is like, it's a subscription-based streaming. So we can kind of compare apples to apples, one-to-one, like a Twitch subscription is a subscription, it's paid. We can compare that apples to apples to some of these other. And I'll actually just pull up that chart right now.
Yeah, no problem.
See if I can't search it. pops up here. Here it is. We can't compare exactly that, like apples to apples, to see where the most subscribers are. And what I found interesting is from a net perspective, like total subscribers, Twitch actually ranks ahead at the time of DAZN or DAZN, I don't know how to pronounce that, yeah. ESPN Plus and Crunchyroll. And it's really not that far behind CBS or HBO. So will they, I mean, the interesting thing for Twitch, which I'd love to pop back here and kind of talk about as well,
sure.
is, you know, right now, I think they have a pretty solid hold on the gaming audience. Like they own about, I'll actually pull up a stat here. Let's see how much of esports content. They have about like 65% of the total esports market segment. Watching from their platform, as opposed to like YouTube, which is 33%, or Facebook, which is about 1%. You know, it'll be interesting to see now that they have like a grasp on that. They probably have about like 80%, I think, of total gaming content. Can they start to branch out and take on like sports, take on Netflix? Like, I think you're seeing a bit of that right now. Like they're doing watch parties around some of their prime shows, like Jack Ryan or The Boys, I think was the other show. And they've seen significant audiences there. The one that I'm most excited about is looking at sports and seeing how they're adapting there. Cause they have rights to the NFL. You know, they have rights to a lot of the big leagues.
Right, and correct me if I'm wrong. They've done, what, the last 2 years they've had Thursday Night Football.
Yep.
On Twitch, and I've watched that a number of times, so I'm one of the viewers.
I am as well. and in terms of like, I think they year over year. Let me see if I can actually pull this really quickly. I'll pull some more historical data to just give some context there. Year over year, I think the stat was like a 40% uptick. And watch time, which is really significant for this. Like, let's see if that is the case. 2018,
2019. Okay,
yeah.
So it was 2018. Okay.
Yeah, so not a 40%, but pretty strong uptick in terms of concurrence, like 5,000 more watching. And I think what they did that was really fascinating to me is kind of leveraging this co-streaming. We actually will break that out to help brands understand the impact of that. So what is co-streaming? Let me back up there for a minute, just explain that. So co-streaming is basically a campaign style where they utilize kind of streamers to kind of react on top of their content. So in this particular showcase, they had like Tim the Tatman, I think Nick Merckx, Nate Hill, a lot of the top talent on this platform, basically watching this content and then reacting to it in front of their audiences. And in terms of the impact of that, I think about 20 or 40%. Let's see if I can find the exact stat for you here. Pop over to sports really quickly.
But again, going back to that, I mean, that's a whole nother level of engagement when you're having those watch parties and those reactions.
Exactly. So yeah, look at that. 50% of the content was watched through co-streams. Like, wow. That's amazing. You know, and that's, I think the, you know, the challenge there that I'll say for brands is I think co-streaming is a great way to get a lot of eyeballs really quickly, because you're able to just quickly deploy authentically in front of an audience versus like trying to build a Twitch channel, which is a challenge for millions. You're trying to make it as streamers. You're able to just instantly deploy in from that audience. The challenge is, number one, picking the right talent to do that so that it feels authentic and it's not a bunch of audience members watching the stream, watching some movie trailer or watching some TV show and going like, I don't like this. This sucks. Like, go back to playing Valorant or whatever. So that's challenge number one. Challenge number two from brand perspective is you don't have as much control over the branded message. You know, you're trusting someone else to do that for you. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in that aspect to create creative campaigns. But for brands, definitely consider that, you know, next time you have the opportunity to, you know, run through a co-streaming campaign, is like you really have to think about whether that's going to be effective for your audience.
Yeah, it's I just wonder what it's going to look like over the next couple of years as far as, you know, the NFL, how it's going to look on Twitch. I mean, I'm just looking at it from a broad perspective, but, you know, they've tested the waters with it. And then I just wonder what the full rollout's going to be like, what it's going to feel like. But I love it. I mean, I cast it to my TV. I just, you know, cast it to my device. And that's how I like to watch Thursday night football. So,
yeah,
I think a lot of people do that. So, and then it's, you know, then you got the, it's a different way to watch it. It's a different way to watch traditional sports as well. Because you have the chat and things like that, which is just different. So we're different demographics. We engage with content differently. And it's just going to kind of continue to evolve. I just keep going back to like the watch parties and things like that, because that is just going to continue to evolve.
Absolutely. The other kind of funny conspiracy theory that I saw around Twitch and Thursday Night Football was from an SBJ article written by Ben Fisher, who you guys should definitely follow on Twitter. He's a really good writer, but he said Jeff Bezos might be vying to buy a NFL team at some point, because they obviously have the I think Twitch is the partner of the Oakland Raiders. You now have both Prime Video and Twitch that has media rights to NFL games. So, you know, could be interesting to see if he makes a play for that.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense. All right. So we are towards the end of the show. I want to thank Bobby for jumping on. What are ways that people can get connected to you, to Stream Hatchet, and be able to use the platform?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I would definitely recommend following us on Twitter. We post a lot of great content there. Follow us on LinkedIn. So at Stream Hatchet, verified account, so pretty easy to find. Myself, I have a Twitter called Barely Baird. You can follow that. I don't post anything too interesting there. It's mostly just retweeting the Stream Hatchet stuff. But yeah, would recommend reaching out to us on Twitter. You can go to our website, streamhatchet.com. We're always happy to, show our platform, look at different data sets with you, just have a discussion. Our goal is to teach people how to fish versus just handing them like some, you know, one-time report like, hey, we're done. Give us $10,000 again and we'll do this again another day. Like, now we want to teach you how to fish, how to be self-sufficient so you can be the one building those reports, controlling your own narrative versus having to kind of grab that nice shiny green infographic and slap it in there and try to make one and one equal 17. So
the universal graphic that's in every deck.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We laugh about that earlier. It's been great information. Great. I love the platform. I mentioned it earlier. It's just really intuitive, really easy to use, even for someone that hasn't used it before. So, but you've got the elements. Cause like you said, it's also cool. You mentioned earlier, as we wrap up, but like Stream Hatchet, how it's changed over the years. Cause I remember it as like a B2C for streamers, and now to see that progression of the company, and how it's changed, to more again, B2B, and just how data rich it is, compared to just being kind of, hey, you know, here's my stream numbers, you know, back in the day. So I think that it's like cool for me to see that.
Yeah. And I think the one thing I'll just close on with that is, like that transformation, like I think any company in esports can kind of make a similar transformation, even if it's not going from B2C or B2B. But really why we were able to do that is, you know, it's just talking to people, learning, trying to be collaborative, not shutting yourself in a box. Like for this industry to succeed, for you to succeed within it, like you have to listen to people. You have to try to, you know, exceed their expectations. So I can't take too much credit for it. You know, I like to simplify my job as I talk to really, really smart people and then dumb it down for dumb people like me. But, you know, it's that piece is so crucial to be able to have those conversations and kind of figure out how you can exceed expectations.
Yeah, I love the esports community, like especially on LinkedIn, that the whole there's this collaboration movement. Herbie jumped on last week and talked about competing versus collaboration. Everyone's kind of jumped on that bandwagon. So that's been kind of the hot narrative, like the last, especially this week. And just there's so much you can do when you can collaborate, especially right now, where we are, even, you know, personally and business lives. Because there's so much. I talk about this a lot, actually. I work with a number of startups, have a lot of conversations, but in most cases, if a company is within your same vertical, they're more than likely a partner and not a competitor. And actually, I've said that for a number of months, because like initially on the surface, it may seem like it. But when you start talking and having the deeper conversation, you're like, oh, wow, this makes a lot of sense. Let's keep talking. You know, like initially, you may think that you're kind of butting heads when in fact, your IPs or whatever are usually good fits. You know,
absolutely.
So just keep your, but you like you just said, you got to keep your mind open.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for having me on this, and let's have a conversation in the future. You know, I'm sure we'll be working together in some way. Chris might be posting some of our data, so look out for that. Chris always has a great perspective on it.